I'd like now to welcome to the program Emma France. She is a jazz vocalist and music composer, and she's a filmmaker. Her new film is a documentary called Intangible Asset Number 82. It opens this weekend at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary.
So you document your friend, Australian jazz drummer Simon Barker, who became fascinated by Korean music and rhythms and the energy and spirituality behind them. It's quite an extraordinary movie. Is there a natural connection between jazz rhythms and Korean drumming?
Well, this particular shamanic drumming, it's not only very complex, the sort of basis of their rhythms and so on, but they improvise on top of it. So that's a natural connection between jazz, which is, of course, improvised music.
So he, Simon Barker, is setting out to try to find a particular improvised shaman, basically Korean shaman, whose, I guess, recording of whose work or whose drumming he'd heard. How was that connection made in the first place? Who was this man?
Simon was actually passing through Korea on the way to Russia, doing a tour with an Australian pianist, Mark Isaacs. And he thought he would just stop and try and get a drum lesson with somebody, find out a little bit about the music. And this teacher played him this recording of the shaman. And when he first heard it, he didn't actually realize it was a shaman or anything about it. He just went, wow, this is the most complex rhythmic vocabulary I've heard. And there's obviously all this improvising there. And he was kind of blown away by the music. And then he found out this guy was a shaman, which also meant that he played for 3 days straight, playing this sort of really intense music. Oh, and also that this shaman was in his 70s at the time of the recording. So he also became fascinated by how, you know, quite an elderly gentleman could produce such energy over such sustained periods with such complex music. And then when he tried to find books or some transcriptions of the music, he couldn't find anything. So he also realized it was, you know, one of those traditions that was passed down orally. And so he became really fascinated. That was the initial inspiration for him.
On the way to trying to find this shaman, he meets another person whom you show in the film who's just unbelievable. He's a Korean, I guess, vocalist, you'd say, who practiced
yes.
his art by living by a waterfall for years on end,
yes.
singing all day long by the waterfall. Explain this person and this practice to us.
Yeah, it's totally unbelievable, that sort of level of commitment to your art. It's a style of singing called pansori, which tells epic stories through song. So these epic stories can last. So in other words, the songs last up to 7 or 8 hours, and the singers sing right through with just a drummer without pause. So it's also about this incredible energy and so on, and these stories that are very tied into history and nature. And so traditionally, the singers have learned by going to live on the waterfall for a couple of years, first with their master, who will teach them the song orally, and then they would then stay on for another 5 years and strengthen their voice and basically sing into the water and against the water to become as powerful or more powerful than the water and really strengthen their voice. So it's just an incredible thing that's very hard for us as Westerners to imagine doing. And he literally lived on a rock by a waterfall in the winter and the summer, so when there was snow and flies and heat and, you know, in all the elements. Really incredible story.
Just the two examples that you've spoken of right now, I mean, somebody singing for 7 or 8 hours without ceasing at the top of his voice, a 70-year-old man drumming for days on end. In your understanding, having been through this journey yourself as filmmaker, you being a musician, where does that energy come from? It clearly is not something that most people can understand, or at least in the Western mind, that we feel that we could generate or do ourselves.
And of course, it takes a lot of practice, but they also work off these various principles. So they think about recycling energy. They think of it as a circular sort of motion. So the more you're performing or singing, the stronger you're getting. So instead of just throwing it out there into an empty void, they think of Well, the singer actually explains it beautifully, like having a rock tied to a string that you spin and you're spinning faster and faster and faster. And that tension that's created between the rock and yourself is this really strong energy that just keeps perpetuating itself. And that's how they think of it. So they sort of channel, as they push out, they sort of channel it back into themselves as well. So it's kind of a difficult concept when you first think about it. But as you sort of see it in practice, you kind of get an idea of what they're talking about. And then, of course, they just really build up their strength. But they also focus on this idea of relaxation when they play. So they don't create strength and energy by being tense. They really practice being incredibly at one with their instrument and being very relaxed. So they're not throwing away any energy as well, which is another great idea.
And one which Simon Barker, our friend whom we meet in this film, finds very useful and really seems to incorporate into his own work as a jazz drummer.
Yes, and this was a really fundamental idea that totally changed the way he plays, the way he approaches the Western drum kit, and just the way he approaches everything in life now. So kind of a really philosophical inner journey for him to become also at one with his instrument and comfortable with how and why he plays music and all of these things. And he's really applied those ideas in a very beautiful way as well, without trying to become a Korean musician or play their music.
But he does. I mean, we see a little bit of a kind of a collaboration between him and Korean musicians. Did he adopt some of the Korean music or learn some of it himself?
Yes. So he learned about the patterns and the rhythms and the way of the interaction. For example, when he plays with a singer, he's sort of listened to a lot of that music and how there's a sort of call and response between the singing and the drums. And so he is quite knowledgeable about all of that. But then he doesn't try to imitate it or play their instruments. So he sort of utilizes those rhythms on the drum kit. And for example, with the shamanic music, he took, you know, various instruments and applied them to, you know, one part of the drum kit or one gong, and he sort of set up his drum kit in an unusual way. And then he utilizes those rhythms, also mixed with the sort of jazz background that he has, to come up with a very unique voice. So that's kind of was one of the very interesting processes that I wanted to follow. And it's how those unique musicians such as Simon do find all those tools of expression that turn them into a very unique musician.
We're talking with Emma Franz about her film Intangible Asset number 82, which is opening this weekend, this Friday night, at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Tell us where the name of the film comes from.
Well, the shaman that Simon heads off in search of, Kim Sok-chul, is actually designated by the Korean government as their intangible cultural asset, and then he's number 82. So the number actually applies to his art form, which is this East Coast Pusan shamanic ritual music. So he's, in a way, he's the holder of that tradition, and it's sort of like an honour to continue that tradition and be the master practitioner of that cultural style and so on. Personally, I loved the idea. I mean, the film really is about those intangible things in life that are so valuable, such as music and culture. And, you know, one of my great passions and the theme of this film before it even started was how music is a bridge between cultures and how it can help us understand ourselves and our community and those, you know, from disparate cultures. So I thought the title of The Shaman was actually a wonderful metaphor for what I was trying to say through the film, and that's just valuing those intangible things in life. Because, you know, we very easily and often forget that.
It's a profound film. I was watching it, and as I was watching it, I thought, I should go see this again. I was watching the DVD in a quiet theater and think about it and feel it and take it in some more, because this is something that, in a way, I mean, you and Simon Barker had the privilege of actually going on a rather long journey together through Korea and meeting these various people. We kind of have to take it all in an hour and a half.
It's a lot to take in.
It's a lot to take in. And I was wondering, I mean, I don't even know if you can really put it into words, but there are these elements of rhythms which involve breathing, which involve gravity, emotion, trance, shamanism, and the relationships among all of those things are something that I guess if you don't learn that when you're young and then you come to it when you're older, it's a lot to try to integrate.
Yeah, it's, I mean, thank you first for saying that you'd want to see it again. It was, for Simon, it was a 10-year journey, so it really took him a long time to understand deeply a lot of those concepts. But in the same way, he will be the first one to say they're actually quite simple concepts. It's sort of thinking about it and how to apply it to what you do. For me, the journey was both long and it felt short, but then obviously I spent years with the material and editing as well and coming to understand it better. And so I tried to convey those ideas through the film as sort of as simply as I could, so that people could just get a taste of it and maybe see it in action, because that's how it made sense to both Simon and I, was actually being there amongst it and just seeing it applied in everyday life, because it doesn't just apply to the practice of the music. It applies to how they kind of conduct themselves. And everything is related to nature. And so when you're there in nature witnessing a lot of these things, it sort of makes more sense. So hopefully through the film and the way I've tried to break down those ideas, it makes a little bit of sense. There were concepts I couldn't even include in the film because there's only so much you can put into one film. One, for example, is an idea called Han, which is the unresolved sorrow of those who have passed on. And it's one of the things that they try to reconcile through music as a bridge between the living and the dead and the people who still are living. And it's just a beautiful idea and I just literally couldn't even fit it into the film. But, you know, hopefully if people are interested in that sort of thing, the film might even inspire them to try and find out a little bit more about it.
When you say the unresolved sorrow of those who've passed on, in other words, somebody who's died with an unresolved sorrow and the people on the ground here trying to help them resolve it after they're passed?
Yes. So that's a lot of what the shamans do. They might do rituals for families and just try, you know, maybe the family's had somebody taken away from them unexpectedly in an accident or some other, you know, tragic situation, and part of the job of this ritual is to try and help the family and say things to their dead person and vice versa, and sort of reconcile some of that, you know. Obviously, it runs a lot deeper than that and in many different applications. But another example is the shaman describes that his drum is made of a branch on which a young virgin hung herself. And, I mean, it's incredibly tragic. But the idea is that the drum can forever kind of be her voice and sing that unresolved sorrow. So it's kind of, at first seems horrific, but it's a very beautiful concept in a way.
Now, we see in the film how all of this affects Simon Barker and his music, his drumming. You are also a jazz musician. You're a jazz vocalist and composer. How has it affected you?
Well, it's affected me quite deeply. Unfortunately, since I made the film, I haven't had time to be a full-time musician. But interestingly enough, when I do have performances, and I really, in a way, feel that I should be very nervous because I'm kind of out of practice, even though I do a lot of practice leading up to performances. But I think about those ideas, and especially the one of relaxation, and also that just playing music is just one of the most fun things you'll get to do all day. So there's kind of no reason, if you take it out of the ego and think of it as a community thing and just how fun it's going to be, just the way that has changed my sense of stage, well, not stage fright, but nerves, and then how it's helped me relax into my own voice and really not think so much about technique, but just think about what I'm trying to put out there. And so it sounds very simplistic in a way, but when you see it, when you're inspired by witnessing people who do that, I feel like it's really changed the way I approach singing.
There are so many examples in non-Western cultures of Westerners going and trying to find something and getting something really profound from it, whether it be Afro-Cuban culture, whether it be African culture or Icelandic, anything. And here, and this is another of these stories, what did the Korean musicians get out of meeting Simon and out of engaging with him and with you?
That's a great question. Not many people ask that, actually. I mean, I can't, of course, speak for them, but I think they all feel that they have been exposed to something new as well. The singer now tours with Simon very regularly, and until then he hadn't, he'd improvised within the style of his music, but he hadn't gone into more abstract improvisation, which he now does. So he's found that very freeing, and he also feels it's taken his music to the world, which it has. And the shaman's family, for example, I happened to meet one of his daughters in Copenhagen when I was there for a conference, and she happened to be performing there. But she actually was crying and saying, you know, we all feel that you took our father's music to the world. And so they all feel like there was something that they gained from the experience. In various different ways. So that, you know, I think they've definitely, their interaction with Simon has been a lot more profound, and then I'm glad that in some ways the film has also had an effect on what they do. And the shaman's grandfather had never met a Westerner before, so things like that are very interesting because, of course, it's also opening up our eyes to them, and it's also opening their eyes to us. And maybe breaking some preconceptions about who Westerners are.
Right. I imagine you would get a lot of interest about this film from other artists and musicians. How have they, out in the rest of the world, as you've shown this in festivals, how have they received the film?
Oh, the response has been really beautiful. It's been really great. I was very nervous. You know, you're obviously very nervous when you throw your baby out into the world, but it's been wonderful. And one of the great pleasures for me has been seeing that the interest is not just restricted to musicians and artists, that people get something from the film, even if they're not into music, and this music's quite abstract as well. I've had people who are ill saying they've found Simon's personal journey so inspirational that it's helped them, or the singer's journey and commitment. I've had, you know, people who could never get their head around the idea of jazz, so they feel that they understand jazz more through Simon's journey, and difference, and of course people who knew very little about Korea, as I did when I started, just
right.
Being opened up to the world of the Korean, you know, and it's broken a lot of preconceptions there as well. So I've been really, really thrilled with the responses so far to the film.
Emma Franz's documentary Intangible Asset Number 82 opens this weekend at the CCA in Santa Fe, ccasantafe.org, 505-982-1338. Emma, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.